time for Live and Direct, thanks to NZ On Air Music. Good God!
Now, I spend most of my time working at the record store flying out, and one of the records that just continues to sell, like, no rhyme nor reason, is Gold, the debut from Arthur Arbez. But by now, you'll be aware that he's got a new record out, Volume 2. It's been out for a couple of months. His track Free of the Wind reached number one on the BFM Top 10, and The Painter's Portrait Part 2 is currently doing the rounds on playlist as we speak. Arthur joins us for a couple of songs. Good evening.
Hey, Zach.
How you going?
I'm pretty tired.
Oh, well, thank you very much for for making it. I might just zhuzh this one slightly closer, doing a little bit of microphone work.
How's that?
Sounding good.
Good.
We'll get you to perform a few songs and then we'll have a chat. What are we going to start with?
This is a Fred Neil song. It's called The Other Side of This Life.
Fantastic. That was great.
Thanks.
Let's hear one more and then we'll have a yarn.
Okay. I'm good at writing ditties. That's all I've been writing lately.
It's easy to get
You're right. that was great. So that first one,
Fred Neil. He's a really a highly esteemed folk musician from the Greenwich folk scene, early 60s, mid 60s. He wrote that song made famous by Harry Nilsson. What was it called? That song from Midnight Cowboy. It's skipped my mind for some reason.
Someone everybody, will know. Text in 5395.
Everybody knows what that song is. Come on.
It escapes my mind. Ben? No? Adam? No?
Oh my gosh.
Tip of the tongue.
It'll come to me later.
Of course. And that second track?
It's called Rich Nourishing Moisturizer. It's just about silly things
like keeping young.
Keeping young, yeah.
Love.
And suicide.
There you go. Hey, so now that Volume 2 is out, you've toured the country with it.
There's some tracks on that album that I just didn't... I'd love to do, like, a full album tour and, like, do a full, like, tour gold and just play the whole thing and Volume 2 as well and get, like, my Indian cohort to play the tablas and have the sitar and everything up. But it's just, like... So it's the logistics of it, and I just like I was having so much fun jamming with my band at the time and just coming up with stuff that we didn't actually rehearse for like the tour songs until like the week or two before, because you know what it's like.
You need that creative New Zealand funding.
Yeah, because I just wanted to get good as a band, you know, and just so we're really gelling instead of like going real hard and knuckling down and like rehearsing the songs like crazy. I'd rather us have like a bit of flow, mm-hmm. so that would come across in the shows rather than like having it all like, you know, the T's crossed and the D's dotted and the riffs, you know, perfectly synchronized with the beat and all that kind of shit.
How do you choose your band members?
I take who what I can get, really. But the current group I've got, I've played with all of them apart from Joe, who's my new guitarist. I found him online. He's a hell of a good find. But the other guys I've all played with in different incarnations of bands that I've, you know, created in other times. Like Hamish, the bass player, he was in my very first, the bass player and the organ player in my first band, Wealthy Mothers, way back in the day. And Shay used to play in the band before the one I've got now. Super bit with his brother Ricky Hanna, who played the bass.
I know Ricky Hanna.
Yeah. So,
what do you mean by you found your guitarist on the internet?
I put out a want. I was real desperate because after Superbird ended, because it was a very stressful band. Everybody was like a professional. Like my friend Todd, who was the guitarist, he's like a doctor. And Ricky Hanna was like bogged down with emails from his job at Sony or whatever. He was always going on about how many emails that he had. And he was like working in the record industry. So he was like, we need that hit single. You know, this one's going to sell. And I was like, oh man, that's not what, it's too much pressure.
Yep.
You know, that kind of vibe. So once that kind of fizzled out, everybody went their other ways. I didn't know anybody else. So I just put out a wanted on the internet on like the rock. I think the rock shop's got like a band.
Yep.
Wanted list. So I just put a thing on there and said, I think I linked to my past album and some like stuff that I liked, and then Joe hit me up, and he linked me a song that he recorded under a pseudonym called Calvin Hertz. And okay. There's a song for on YouTube that he's got with a really cool music video, which is shot, the video unfolds backwards, and it's like these Ooh. Two guys having a gunfight out in the desert. It's really cool. It's a real cool song. So check that out, Calvin Hertz.
You just messaged.
Exchanged emails, and he was living in the, I think he'd just moved up recent to Auckland because he'd been in Nelson, and then he came over, and it was just like, oh yeah, it just clicked, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
And then when we started jamming and coming up with being able to create stuff together, because that's not something I'd had with my other two bands, is being able to jam and really create something. Usually I'd write all the songs and then bring them to the band and have to tell everybody, which isn't that fun, how to play it. So this band's really good because we can all kind of come up with stuff creatively on our own.
Oh, good.
Which is really rewarding.
Yes.
When you just, like, all these band practices, I record most of the band practices and, like, spontaneously play, come up with songs, you know, and then I've listened back and tried to recreate it. Oh, I can't do it. Like, just riffs and stuff, because it's so there in the moment and you can hear what you want to play as you play it, you know what I mean? And that's really special. So I need to get these guys into a studio so we can get that in a professional setting, because the energy that you capture in moments like those is fantastic. That's how Neil Young does it, or did it, and tries to do it. That's why his stuff is so... It's got that really interesting... It's like a vibe on his records, like Tonight's the Night and stuff like that. There's a vibe that you get listening to those that you don't find in a lot of other records, you know?
Mm. How do you feel about his latest one?
Peace Trail is the last one I've listened to, and I really like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And his 80s work, the synth record?
I like it all. Oh. He didn't give a fuck, man, because he was so burnt out. And, like, the record company he was working for, Griffin Records, were like, we want a rock and roll album. So, like, okay, so he did, like, this real traditional 50s-style rock and roll. And they're like, we want a country album. So he went to and did, like, and kind of did it, I don't know, out of spite, but, like, he just took it to the extreme.
Yeah.
And it's great songs. He just writes great songs.
Yeah, you can't deny it.
Yeah, obviously some people find it that stuff from the 80s uncharacteristic of his more famous works, but I like it all.
Good. I was wondering, with you, what came first, the guitar or singing?
Definitely the guitar.
Definitely the guitar? Yeah,
no, I remember I couldn't sing and play the guitar until I was like 18, and I learned guitar when I was an intermediate, and then my friends... We're watching these girls sing and play guitar at school, and we're like, what? Those lame girls can sing and play, and we can't. And we felt real ashamed of ourselves. But it was real hard at first.
I'm always totally in awe of people, people who can, like, play the drums with their feet, play the guitar, and also sing at the same time.
All at once, yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's nuts.
It's just like learning to on the piano, you know, having liberating your left hand from your right so you can just have a rolling bass line and then improvise. That's always a trick at first, but once you break that ice, it's such an amazing feeling, because you just all of a sudden you feel like this cathartic release, and you're like, oh, I'm free, and I can,
you're done.
I can do stuff. But then you have to learn another song with a different bass line, you're like, shit, back to square one.
So you can play piano as well?
Yeah.
Did that come before guitar?
Actually, yes, but very briefly. Learnt in primary school, and then you know how kids are, they complain and then the parents give way.
Yes.
I wish mine didn't, but I'm not blaming them.
What did they give way to? Soccer?
Oh, I sucked at everything, man. They made me play every sport possible. The only one I was good at was softball.
Oh, yeah.
But I did everything, and I don't know what happened. I did like a season of each one, and then somehow I just complain. I'm the youngest, so I guess parents, when the youngest child's, you know, they can't be stuffed with the complaints. They're just like, all right.
Off you go.
Yeah, go play the computer then. Just
Have your parents listened to Volume 2?
Yeah. They're very supportive.
Oh, good.
It's nice, yeah. I try to get my dad, I bought him a record player, but he's more into the whole, you know, high quality FLAC.
High definition recordings
these days, which is fair enough.
Now we're talking.
Because he's like, he's done the whole vinyl thing, but like, come on, Dad, this is the way to listen to it. And he's like,
no, FLAC.
Yeah, FLAC, man. Uncompressed.
has the kind of the warm sound that you go for always been what's piqued your interest, or did you have like a pop punk phase?
I always wanted to play in like a hardcore or punk band, because I used to listen to punk heaps when I was growing up, like all that surf punk stuff, and then all that hardcore scene that was prevalent in like Hamilton and in the Bay of Plenty. I was all into that. I bought the guitar. I had like this, like the cool black Super Strat and like the big stack.
Yep.
And jammed a couple of times. I was always so keen to jam, but it was just real hard to get anybody to sync. Why I'm stoked with the musicians I've got, because I'm like, oh, I've actually got people to play with now.
So are we talking like Brick versus Face?
Yeah, I'm friends with those guys. Those guys, and
they were my first show. Their first album, that was the first show I went to.
Really? Where was that?
It was at it was called The Vineyard, which was
a church
in Napier.
Yeah.
blew my mind.
I was in Napier.
Yeah.
Because there was one in the Mount as well they used to play.
Ah, yeah.
I saw One Must Fall play there. You know, who's in that? Yeah. Dave Baxter of Avalanche City.
That's who the one.
And he wrote all those songs, man. My mind was blown at some of those riffs and stuff he was playing. Like, that's world-class stuff that those guys were doing, I thought.
Mm. All those records sounded so good as well.
Mm.
And I guess it makes sense that they're
all DIY. I mean, they all did it themselves and stuff. So
exactly, but cool. They're so talented behind the scenes as well.
Yeah.
Like, so,
and there was a real authentic energy they had, because there was obviously the angst or the dissatisfaction with, you know, living in a small town and all the you know, society's lies.
I hear you. I hear you. I know. To break the chains.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, listening to Volume 2, why did The Painter's Portrait end up as four parts?
I'm pretty into a lot of, I guess you'd call it, not hardcore folk, not like the real old shanty sea sailing stuff, although that's cool, but I don't know, there was some romantic creative aura around the conception of those songs, and I felt they all needed to go together. And it was like, I don't know, it's one big existential ballad, really. I just kind of lumped them all together, and I don't know, it was just a natural creative process. That's how it happened, really.
I love it. It's quite a bold statement.
Yeah.
First up, right there, all four.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Oh, thank you.
Maybe if we could double back to that initial question I asked, now that the record is out,
mm-hmm.
how do you feel about it?
I don't know. I'm pretty stoked on the reception that I've gotten, because people have. I'm sure I'll hear more as time goes on about how it affects people. But I'm just especially glad that it's found its way to all different parts of the country and parts of the world, and people have just emailed me and said, you know, that it's really, I don't know, that people just like it.
What parts of the world are we talking?
I've had a guy in Belgium.
Cool.
Some people in Germany, Ukraine, the States, and then I played a show in Napier on the tour, and there's a real small crew that are like super stoked to be there. Like
Cabana?
One guy was like, I've gone and read all your interviews and listened to all the stuff online, and like,
you got a bit of spare time.
I was like, wow, cool, man. That's really nice. Yeah, and he was like sitting on the couch with his friend. He was like, this is so great, I can't believe it. Because we were just playing on this crappy little like 1 foot stage on the ground in front of like four people. And he was loving it.
Where was it?
That was at the Cabana.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they halve the room, or was it full room?
Yeah, it was kind of halved. Oh, yeah.
Full room is quite hard at the Cabana, unless you're Jacob.
Oh. The people that we got there were cool, but it's unfortunate we didn't get more.
It's a hard place, unless you're the Phoenix Foundation.
Yeah, yeah. We even got in the newspaper. There was a little picture in the newspaper.
There you go.
Thanks to, I think it was my Ryan, who plays tambourine in the band. I think his auntie had some connections, so.
That's what I love about New Zealand.
Yeah, yeah. Super cool.
Hey, so thank you so much for coming up. Those first couple tracks were really lovely. We've got time for one more. What will we hear?
Part one, two, maybe three.
turns to deep descent.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Zach.
That was Live and Direct, thanks to NZ On Air Music.